Welcome back to Shattering This. What we've been talking about in terms of Ebola is amongst the most concerning issues, I think, on our immediate horizon. I think if you would combine, if you look at the landscape and things that we should be concerned about, I'm going to say Ebola, but with a caveat here, but along with the Islamic State and what they're doing in terms of pushing the world towards world war, the overall destruction of economies and currencies around the world with central banks and government spending and entitlement programs, all of those things have a extraordinarily threatening and negative conclusion. But when you take a virus that is spreading like this, for which there is no cure, and you combine that with the potential of another outbreak of an avian flu. For example, Glenn, the last time it was human error, a vaccine that went awry, and then the U.S. servicemen spreading the vaccine around 1917, 1920, in that range, around the world, killing between 50 and 100 million people. Back then, we were just beginning with aviation. Very few people are traveling by plane. We had ships that would take people around to various parts of the world, but, you know, not nearly as efficient as airplanes. Trains were certainly prevalent, but not necessarily around the world. What do you think would happen if we came up with a similar strain of aviation, of avian flu, bird flu, today, with the mass transport and the mass integration of people around the world? How many people could potentially die from it?
Oh, it's amazing. This is why there's a T-shirt that says, "I'm trying to prevent an outbreak and you're driving the monkey to the airport." The flu, the Spanish flu, had like a 2 or 3% kill rate and killed all the people it did. The flus that are brewing on the back burner that are going to get loose are going to dwarf this Ebola outbreak. A flu is going to be far more lethal. The Ebola is going to be horrible. It's going to be a wake up call. But the flus are going to be, and they come together. The ideology, the ideological problems, and the diseases come together precisely at the Hajj in October. Because if Ebola begins to get out there from this guy who died, came from Sierra Leone, and the MERS is there, and 3 million Muslims converge, all you have to do is Google Muslim trip packages, Hajj trip packages, and you'll find all kinds of travel agents out there selling Hajj packages. They're expecting 3.5 million people to converge upon Mecca this year for the Hajj. They've got away with two Hajjs without the MERS getting out. I can't really see it. I think the third time's a term on this one. I don't see them getting away with that this year. It has become far too spread. Last year there were like 30 people dead from it. This year there are almost 300 people dead from it. It's very, very much more likely to get out this year. And if Ebola is there in addition to that, we're going to have 3.5 million Muslims eligible to become carriers and get on airplanes and carry them back to their home countries.
Correct. And combine that with the upward mobility of China, which is where most of the most viral strains of influenza, aviation, avian flu have come from is China. With the China now having amongst the most mobile international population in the world today.
And the mutation rate of those flu viruses, you know, to try and catch up with them with a vaccine, given the rapidity of the mutation rate, is very difficult. So this is why, you know, that exacerbates things further. So
now, we do have we have vaccines for flu, but the problem with the vaccines is that the vaccines are trying to anticipate what the next flu is going to be.
It's a bureaucracy. The flu is picked by a committee. It's a committee. What do you expect from a committee? They every year they pick a bunch of things to put in the vaccine, and every year they're wrong.
Yes.
They don't hit the one that kills people. You know, if you're, oops, we didn't put that one in there. Oops, sorry, guys. you know. So get your flu shot. Make sure you go out there and get that.
And then there is a treatment for flu but it's prescription. This, we have stockpiles of it, but we don't have nearly enough of it, not even a fraction of what is required for, you know, if 330 million Americans, at least in America, and let's just say that a third of Americans contracted it, 90% of those would die. I mean, that's how little of this
we have. Tamiflu doesn't work that well anyway. So, you know, I think you're better off with, naturopathic. I personally would go with naturopathic anti-infectives like the iodine, silver, and, stuff like that. But even cinnamon. There are people who worked in a spice factory who did not contract flu.
Yeah. And one of the problems, of course, is the antibacterial things that typically work on bacterium. Antibiotics do. They don't typically work on viruses. So
when you're given antibiotics when you have the flu, it's to prevent opportunistic bacterial infections. It's not for the flu itself.
Correct. That's correct. Because you're not going to deal with the flu. And one of the things about these new strains of flu, which are developed every year throughout the world, and they are passed on far more readily because you can breathe it in. You know, someone exhales near you and you breathe in the exhaled air.
They're
so you don't have to touch them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so, yeah, it's so in that case, what we found in 1917 was that the elderly who have, whose just physical vigor isn't enough to fight off the flu, and therefore they will die of another related illness. And the young who aren't robust enough at this point to fight it off are the victims.
Oh, actually, with one caveat there too. Yeah.
Yes.
The very young, the young strong people, adolescents and young adults, are at greater risk because their bodies produce more of what is called a cytokine storm. And with the flu, it's actually the body's response to the flu in the form of cytokine storm, which proves lethal. So sometimes, like older people, such as myself in my 50s, or a younger child who is not someone in their teens or 20s, if you're older, your body will produce less of a cytokine storm, and therefore people in older and very younger groups are less likely to die.
Okay.
So that's the strange here.
All right. So now you're dealing with a disease that 100 years ago, a little less than 100 years ago, killed upwards of 100 million people, and it was based upon a mistake made at a U.S. military base. Now, what do you think would happen to the world? Now, 100 years ago, there was no Internet, obviously. There was no radio was just beginning. There was no television. What do you think would happen in a world with the Internet, with radio, with television, with mass communications, where tens of millions of people are dying? What kind of society would you expect? Do you think that the United States is going to function like it does today under those circumstances?
They call it yo-yo. You're on your own. And that's why we have the zombie apocalypse in the media.
What percentage of people would go to work under those circumstances?
Right. And this is very few. Well, what percentage of policemen or paramedics?
Okay, so if people don't go to work, how do you get food in stores?
No, the economy comes to a grinding halt, and people start killing each other for food.
Right.
It's that simple.
So in today's world, it could be far more catastrophic than just the number of people who contract the disease. Because if you get a disease today, and I think it's inevitable that in the next 10 to 20 years we're going to have an outbreak of a viral disease that for which there is no cure, no immediate vaccine, and we're going to see worldwide panic as it relates to people's response.
This is why I'm more interested in being prepared to meet Yahweh face-to-face than I am in trying to prep here. What am I going to do, shoot my neighbors so they don't steal my rights?
Right. Yeah, and one of the things, we are clearly saying that the smartest thing you can do is prepare to meet Yahweh and to observe the Torah so that you know what the terms and conditions are of the covenant so you can understand them and embrace them, because if you take the opposite approach, let's say that you think that, all right, I'm going to support my government because I think my government's going to protect me. I'm going to build a bunker. I'm going to buy a year's worth of food. I'm going to buy enough ammunition to kill my entire community if they come to try to steal my my food. You know, how long do you think you're going to survive if you are fed, watered, and secure in a bunker? How long do you think you're going to survive before other people know you're there and you have to kill, you know, thousands of people to protect your stash?
Right. That's why the real preppers want to try to get out in the hinterlands in a community group of 10 or more. Yeah, maybe if you can do your own little enclave, maybe stand a chance. But I personally have no inclination to do that. I got people to take care of, you know.
No.
And so,
yeah,
you know, there's that old cliche, that old truism that, you know, he is no fool who gives up that which he cannot keep in order to gain that which he cannot lose.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was said by a Christian missionary who gave up both.
But the content itself, you know, is correct.
Yes.
You know, in the generic sense, and the we know from, and you can correct me.
Well, I would tell you, Glenn, that, you know, if I were given the opportunity, and you said, all right, I'm just hypothetical scenario. I've got automatic weapons. I've got machine guns. I've got my bunker. I've got my generator. I've got my well. I've got a year's worth of food.
Reese's peanut butter cups.
Yes, and plenty of Reese's peanut butter cups, and we're just going to survive on our own. When someone gets word of that, and then comes to try to say, we're starving, can you give us some? And you make the decision between sending them away, killing them, or giving them some. And if you say, my personality is I will give them some, then when does the next person show up? And the next person show up, and all of a sudden your year supply is down to a week supply.
Exactly.
Would you ever turn? Would you be willing to shoot people, to kill them, to elongate your own life for a matter of a week or a month?
Exactly.
I don't think so. I don't think so. And so what is it all for? I can tell you there's only one solution here. Observe the Torah, come to know the terms and conditions of the covenant, and accept them. We have Larry joining us along with Glenn. Guys, I want you to comment on this, because I've got a real problem with it. You know, the general that's now being called, he was a true American hero that was killed in Afghanistan. I really don't care. You know, if you choose to go play war, and you want to play cowboys and Indians, and that's your choice of a career, and you get killed playing cowboys and Indians, you're not going to get any sympathy from me.
Now, if you're a doctor, if you want to go over to Africa and try and cure Ebola and you get Ebola, well, sorry.
You think that your God's going to protect you from it and you're going to go win souls to your religion by showing compassion to those who have Ebola and you contract Ebola because your God really didn't protect you because your God really doesn't know you because your God's not really real. I'm sorry. There's nothing in me that says we owe these people something, and this notion that the integration of a very famous religious individual, Graham, with the federal government arranged to bring two Ebola-affected individuals into this country, is flat out wrong. I've got a real problem with it. If they contracted Ebola because they didn't think they would get it because their God was protecting them, then they're foolish. You know, I've had 1,000 death threats, but I had an agreement with Yahweh that he would protect my home and protect me from Muslims. He is going to do it. But do you think that I'm going to go and take a bullhorn to Mecca and stand in the middle of the Hajj and say that Allah is Satan just to prove the point? No. What do you think, Larry?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think if somebody goes over and they contract Ebola, it's insane to bring them over here.
Right.
You know, they went out there at their own risk. I mean, I remember the countless movies that have been made about journalists that go into war zones and then they were, you know, killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's this sad, horrible thing. And while they're out there trying to get a Pulitzer Prize, and
right.
they may get one, they may not. They get a lot of kudos and adulation. Right. They make their living, and they get killed doing it.
Yeah.
I would not, as an example, go into the middle of Afghanistan and get into the middle of a political fray or down right. in South America. And if they do it and they get killed, I mean, everybody's shocked. I mean,
you're giving Muslims
so
weapons and training them how to use the weapons, and you're standing up before them when they're holding their weapons, and you're surprised that they shoot and kill you? why is that?
Brilliant. Now you're asking, does my heart bleed for the general?
No.
The great American hero? No.
Hell no. I mean, he was part of the system that was giving weapons to Muslims.
Do you know how he became a general? He was a politician.
Of course.
Absolutely.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that there is really no difference between a senior officer in the military and a politician.
Yeah,
they're one and the same. They're all politicians
at that level. Totally political at that level. Completely.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're complicit in the decisions that they're making, one of which is to arm Afghanistan. Just as they were complicit in arming the Shiites in Iraq. They were complicit in arming the Sunnis in Iraq. You know, if they get killed in the crossfire, it's actually poetry. I mean, it's what you would expect.
Wait, one last stuff from you guys. The guy gets, and also because he has two stars, you know, if he had three stripes, then we wouldn't be hearing about it. But But in terms of people dying, I actually have to go because I'm really busy. But you can correct my name for the prophet, but we know from Ezekiel.
Yes.
At some point, one quarter of humanity is going to die, then one third, which will be the same size as the first quarter, leaving roughly half of humanity. So, you know, these are some pretty, you know, if you think these numbers we're seeing now are staggering, where you start getting to a quarter and a third. So,
until the world falls apart around all this, and that's what's going to happen.
Right. The second half of the tribulation is a killing field. And there is no way that it's strictly that the United States and Russia decide they're going to have a nuclear confrontation. Yeah, they could, and that might take out a lot of people. And it may also be that Apophis strikes and there's a tidal wave associated with it, and it takes out the coast of the United States and the coast of Europe. That'll contribute to it, and it may be that Muslims come into Israel by the hundreds of millions, and Yahweh wipes them out. That would contribute to it. But, you know, 100 million here, 100 million there.
You've got some serious numbers.
But still, 100 million here and 100 million there isn't 3.5 billion. So to get to 3.5 billion, it's a lot more than Yahweh annihilating the 200 or 300 million jihadists that came to destroy Israel. It's a lot more than the coastlands of Europe and the United States and 100 million here and 100 million there. Let's resume when the commercials end. It is true that Yahweh speaks of one quarter of the Earth's population dying. And then he speaks of a third of those who remain dying. That's half the world's population dying. And that's actually before the worst of the tribulation. That's just the transition part of the tribulation. But think about that for a moment. There's 7 billion people today. That's 3.5 billion people. So let's say that you have Yahweh do what he's promised to do, and he wipes out the Muslims who come into Israel after Israel is forced to give up the West Bank. And that would be 200 million people gone. Let's say that Apophis hits as expected, and it takes out the coastal cities of the United States and of Europe. 100 million in both places gone. That's 400 million people. 400 million people as a percentage of 3.5 billion, what, about 12%? We're nowhere close. So let's say that there is a nuclear response be somehow between Russia, China, and the United States, and that Russia and China are the parts that weren't annihilated by the tidal wave. But get it? You lose another 100 million people in the United States, another 100 million people in Russia. Now you're at 600 million. Well, 600 million is a percentage of 3.5 billion is still less than 20%. The only way you get to the kind of numbers that Yahweh has told us are going to happen is to have horrible pandemics. And so you're not dealing with an avian flu that's going to take out 50 to 100 million people, or Ebola that's going to kill, you know, right now it's 1,000, and yet it's in metropolitan areas, so it's going to be tens of thousands pretty much at the minimum at this point with this outbreak of Ebola. But you're not talking about tens of thousands.
You know, I haven't been keeping up on that, Yada, and I was not listening to the show earlier. Is that, you know, I've just been seeing what's coming across on Drudge. You're saying it's in metropolitan areas where?
Monrovia, Liberia, mm-hmm. which is the largest city in Liberia. And now it's now in Lagos, Nigeria. Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa, and Lagos is the most populous city of Nigeria. And so it's in those two metropolitan areas where those are places of millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time ever that there has been an outbreak of Ebola, even in a town. I mean, previously, it's only been in remote villages, and now it's in two of the most heavily populated towns in Africa. Maybe I don't know if Lagos, Nigeria is. I know Nigeria is the most populated country in Africa. I don't know if, and I know that Lagos is its most populated, heavily populated city. It may well be the most populated city in all of Africa.
I think it is. You know, and of course, the problem you have is the minute you start putting people like that on planes and shuffling them around the world, right, which they've already done.
Oh, and, great. We know of two. One that was stopped at the last moment when passengers wouldn't board a plane with somebody that looked like they might have Ebola, and it turns out they did have Ebola. It was at the airport with a ticket. And then you have somebody that just arrived in Saudi Arabia that died of Ebola that flew from Sierra Leone, which is almost all Islamic, to Saudi Arabia.
Fell down dead at Heathrow Airport a couple of days ago as they were exiting a plane as well.
Yeah, okay, might be. I've not heard that one.
No, at least that was news. That was in the news.
Okay.
I didn't write the source down, but, you know, that's pretty bad all the way around. I think what I find shocking is that anybody would even think to be taking planes out of there. Really?
Oh, I know. The major Western countries, particularly Europe, stopped flying out of Sierra Leone and in Guinea. But there is nobody that I'm aware of that has ceased all flights to Liberia and to Nigeria. And yet, so we are moving people back and forth out of those countries. And with Ebola now having broken out,
will spread. Then that will spread.
What do you do? In the small village, you could isolate them and quarantine them. You can't quarantine a city as large as Lagos, Nigeria. It's impossible.
Not unless you stop the flights and the buses and the trains.
Oh, you'd have to. I mean, Nigeria's military is not sufficiently equipped to find 300 little girls that were kidnapped and are being raped multiple times a day. What do you think the likelihood is that Nigeria's military would be able to put a quarantine, a siege ring, around the largest city in the country and force people who will now be panicked and want to escape from leaving that city?
Like, zero.
Zero.
There's another. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Once you get to a city the size of Lagos, you just like if the United States, if you had a city of
you're right, because they're going to be fighting to get out of there because they don't want the
right. Let's say that it's Atlanta. What do you think the odds are that the United States could effectively quarantine the citizens of Atlanta?
Nobody could do it.
Let's be honest here. At this moment, they're not even containing it to small villages.
No.
It's spreading from small villages. They can't even contain it in villages.
Right. Rather than trying to quarantine it, which is the only rational response, the only moral response, the only compassionate response, is to quarantine it, which takes a great deal of fortitude. That means that you're saying that those who've contracted the disease and been exposed to it in these small communities, that they're going to die and that you're not going to provide any relief for them. And that's really tough, but that's the single most compassionate and wisest and most moral thing you can do. And most people are unwilling to do that. But that was the only sane approach to this. We didn't take that approach. We had missionaries over there that were trying to care for them as opposed to quarantine them. And now look what's happened.
Now how are you going to care for somebody with a disease that you've got no way to to patch them up? I mean, you can't do it.
And the very fact that you touch the person with the disease means that you're now contaminated with the disease, and the next person you touch, if they don't have the disease, you're now contaminating them with the disease.
Yeah, it's pretty much over then. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I mean,
sometimes this expression of compassion is the worst thing we can do. And I want to equate this with Islam. Islam is a vastly more deadly pathogen than Ebola. Islam has killed several hundred million people since it was conceived. Today, it is the single most deadly entity on the planet. It has killed...
Oh, it's filthy.
In the range of a million people between Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, just in that hub, it's killed in the range of a million people.
Yeah, you're talking about physical death, but you
physical
know, there's stuff out there, they're taking little girls in chains now.
Right,
and marry these
raping
bastards
right,
who just killed their parents.
Mutilating little girls by their own mothers. I mean, it's the most diabolical disease ever created by humankind, and currently it is by far the most deadly. And there's this sense in the West, that compassion and political correctness would mean that you should embrace them and should find should never speak ill of them, even though a cursory review or a thorough review of the Quran and Hadith says that this is a death cult.
Well, I'm afraid my office is making a little too much noise over here. I'm going to have to get off the line, Yeah, this is sorry to hear. I wasn't even aware it had gotten that bad already. But I guess the minute somebody steps off a plane and Heathrow and dies, it's pretty much over.
Yeah, misplaced compassion when the most wise thing you could do, whether the disease is Islam or the disease is Ebola, is quarantine. It's the only solution, and we were unwilling to implement that solution. And now look at the mess we have.
Wow. We're going to be talking about tens of thousands dying, for sure. I mean, I think it's got about a 80 or 90% kill rate, doesn't it?
It depends on the particular strain of it, but the lowest kill rate is 65%, and it goes all the way up to about a 93 to 95% kill rate. And it really depends.
I'm somewhere in the middle there at 80.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And so it is a disease that the only solution at this point is quarantine. And we were unwilling to do it because of this sense of compassion that would embrace those that are infected as opposed to quarantine those that are affected.
Well, I mean, also Christianity would carry that filth too, wouldn't it?
Yes. But
the compassionate filth kill
right.
you deal.
Yeah,
you know,
misplaced compassion. And it's misplaced compassion, because I want to make this the connection. It's misplaced compassion towards the most deadly pathogen man has ever conceived, Islam, that is causing Muslims, enabling Muslims to perpetrate 99% of the world's terrorist acts, and in the heart of the Islamic world, kill a million people.
How many are dead in Damascus over there in Syria?
You know,
something like 170,000.
We don't even know because the... You know, the estimates in just the Syrian proxy war rose to about 300,000, and since then, nobody even wants to speculate, I guess, because we have no clue.
And we're isn't the Western powers actually arming the?
Of course, the United States is providing the weapons that have led to the death of 300,000 people, and we don't really know how bad it is. I did see the other day.
I just put my 3,500 in last night.
Yeah,
just you know for the quarter, but
buy a little more bullets, buy a little more a little weaponry for the Islamic State in Syria, so they can go and use those weapons in Iraq. You know.
This is bizarre. I mean, we've got a country that is controlled by people other than even Americans. I don't think your average American would even be for that, you know.
No, I don't. Wouldn't put it past Senator John McClellan. He seems to be zealous for it, as well as Obama Nation. They're both zealous for it.
Well, anything that funds
George Bush was certainly zealous for it. So, I mean, they were propagandists for the cause.
I don't believe Americans run their own country. I really don't. I think there's a group up there, and they just do what they want, and they say to hell with what you people think. I mean, they've pretty much proven that with the open borders situation, you know.
Yeah, I actually think we're doing it to ourselves, and I think that we can blame ourselves because we elected these idiots, and because most Americans are now incapable of evaluating evidence and rendering a rational decision that we brought this plague upon ourselves. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about Ebola and the current outbreak. Depending on which article you read, my initial conclusion appears that it may well have been correct that Samaritan's Purse, the Graham organization, arranged for the San Diego company's treatment that has been used on about 20 monkeys under very different scenario, very different conditions, and some rats under entirely different conditions, was provided to the two American missionaries prior to their departure to the United States, recognizing that the drug is not approved in the United States, and to apply a untested drug in the United States, there's all sorts of issues. And so it appears that, depending on which periodical you read here, but that my initial assumption that Samaritan's Purse arranged for the San Diego firm to supply this and then got approval to give it to American citizens, but outside of the United States, appears to be more likely. I was reading an analysis of Ebola over the past, at least during my lifetime. 1976 was the worst outbreak of Ebola prior to this current outbreak. 490 people died in 1976. It happened in the Congo. And Uganda, South Central Africa, and the deep jungles. So in 1976, about 490 people died. Then there was not another outbreak of Ebola until the period of 1994 through 1996. Collectively, between those 3 years, about 300 people died. Then there was no outbreak of Ebola until 2000. In 2000, about 200 people died. About 150 people died the following year. In 2001. Then in 2003, about 200 people died. 50 to 100 in 2004, 2005. In 2007, 250 people died of Ebola. Also, every one of these cases in the Congo and Central Africa. Then less than 100 in 2008. Then you reach 2014. More people have died of Ebola and have contracted Ebola than have died and contracted the disease throughout all of recorded history. And this year alone. That's how significant the difference is. Now, I had shared that I thought that Lagos was a very large city, that it was the largest city of Nigeria, which is the largest country population-wise in Africa. I had no idea it was as large as it actually is. 21 million people reside in Lagos. 21 million people. Here's the story. Abuja, Nigeria. The World Health Organization says the death toll from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa has risen above 932. The new figures come Wednesday as authorities in Nigeria confirmed the death of a nurse of Ebola. The growing number of cases in Lagos, a megacity of some 21 million people, comes as authorities acknowledge that they did not treat Patrick Sawyer as an Ebola patient, and they did not isolate him for the first 24 hours after his arrival in Nigeria last month. Sawyer, a 40-year-old American of Liberian descent with a wife and three young daughters in Minnesota, was traveling on a business flight to Nigeria when he fell ill. The death of the unidentified nurse marks the second Ebola death in Nigeria, and this worries health experts as it is Africa's most populous country and Lagos, where the deaths occurred, one of its biggest cities. We are in for a horrible, horrible ride here over the next year as the world tries to deal with this astonishingly deadly disease, and to figure out how in the world we deal with the fact that the only effective treatment, the only way to stop the spread of Ebola, has been quarantine. But it's impossible to quarantine a city of 21 million people. We have Jim on the line. He is calling in from Minnesota. He has a different topic, but one that we can carry into the third hour. But we can at least begin with Jim. You have a question on the Levites and their offerings. Unfortunately, Jim, I talked right to the music for the top of the hour news. So, Jim, if you'll stay with us over the news and commercial break, we will see if we can answer your questions or at least listen to and try to understand your perspective on the Lowy, which have been corrupted to Levites, and their mission.